Hi, welcome to Inside Learning, episode 133 for the 23rd of January 2014. Not the Ready Break School of Education. Good evening, Steve. How are you tonight?
Good evening, Matthew. Always delighted to hear you again.
Well, it's been no time since last week. We had a lovely conversation with Professor John Macbeth.
Yes, it was a really good conversation, really rich.
Had some great feedback about that, and really good appetite whetter for our listeners. For tonight's guest, we're delighted to be joined by Cabinet Secretary Mike Russell. Hi, Mike.
Hi, hello, how are you?
Very, very good indeed. We always aim in this podcast, Mike, to do something just north of half an hour. We've never delivered anything like that, but we understand you've got a very tight deadline tonight, so you should be good for our discipline.
I'll keep you to time, don't worry.
Good. Okay. One of the things, I know that you've listened occasionally to the podcast and we're delighted to hear that. I hope you haven't listened to any of the ones that we've made jokes in, of course, because one of our standing jokes when we're feeling particularly playful is that yourself and your counterpart, Mr. Gove, south of the border, have probably been listening in to us, and we hope you're taking our advice.
Well, I would certainly take your advice. I have to say about Michael Gove, I'm not sure he would, you know, but... That's his problem. I think my unique selling point in Scotland is I'm not Michael Gove.
Well, I have to say that that will endear you to Steve right from the start anyway.
Absolutely.
Well, listen, without further ado, let's get into the value of the conversation then. What we had been really hoping to talk about was the kind of longer-term trends in education, and obviously you've got a particular perspective in that. One of Steve's big questions is, you know, how do you balance as a, you know, as a kind of a very high-level leader, you know, that central strategy against local autonomy? Anything that's about differences with England and that is always of interest to us, because it's one of the central themes of the podcast, is learning from each other. But to get us started, I thought it'd be interesting to have a quick chat about how the change pressures look to yourself, Mike. You know, what are the long-term trends? I guess, you know, as a starter, you know, the technological trends, you know, and then the trends, you know, with the global economy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the most important thing in education, I'm going to sort of go off on a limb here, and I actually have said this to Michael Gove. I mean, I'm sure I shouldn't reveal private conversations, but I have actually said this to him. I think the most important thing in education is where you come from in terms of your tradition as a country and what is guiding you. Scotland has the longest tradition of compulsory education in the world. You know, we had the first compulsory schools. We have a very, very strong tradition of local delivery. Those schools were parish schools. They were established to serve local communities, and they were controlled by local communities. When you become Education Secretary in Scotland, I think your most worrying first moment is you suddenly see the diversity of that structure. It's not a monolithic structure. You know, the right-wing press might present it as a monolithic structure, but it's actually a very, very diverse structure. There is, for example, no curriculum in Scotland, no central curriculum. You know, there's freedom for schools to deliver. And in those circumstances, what we need to do in Scotland is to recognise that that's a strength, a huge strength, and then to build and develop on that strength. So I think the most important thing in education is where you've come from and how you're going to continue to build upon that to deliver for the country. Now, you know, south of the border, there's a different history. There's a different way of doing things. And we just have to recognise that and to try and impose what's happening elsewhere on Scotland. And that's one of the big debates. You know, we should have this, we should have that, we should have academies, we should have free schools. Misunderstands what education is about, what the policy is about, and what the roots are about. And that's really important to me.
Okay. In terms of, you know, building then on those roots, and, you know, having explained those differences, what do you see as the biggest challenges going forward? You know, what are the pressures that make it difficult for you to nail down what we are and how we move forward? For example, you know, technology.
It has to happen. So, you know, what we've got to do is to make sure that every young person gets the best opportunity to succeed and to fulfill their potential. That's what it's about. That's the sort of mission that we have to fulfill. How do we do that? Do we have a system that is uniform, that excludes young people? Or do we have a system that's tailored to individual young people? Now, I'm quite lucky in the job I do. I have, you know, essentially a smallish population, 5 million people, 5 million plus people, a comparatively small number of schools compared to south of the border, about 2,500 schools. So we can focus upon individual requirements, individual need, and making sure that individual potential is fulfilled. We can also address the persistent problems in Scottish education, one of which is the achievement gap. You know, essentially educational destiny is dictated about where you come from, the type of community you come from, the type of family you come from. And that's what we should address. I'm a very strong fan of those who write about education, people like Pasi Sahlberg, who talk about the need to resist the global education reform movement that says it's all about money, it's all about structures, it's all about competition. I want to focus on individual young people, making sure they succeed and making sure the system supports them to succeed.
So presumably then, Mike, you also, in that regard, having to resist the pressures, the international global pressures from things like the PISA test, you know, the OECD PISA.
Well, PISA gives you an indication of what you're doing, but it's not a comparative system. I mean, one of the great mistakes, and that's one of the things about league tables, the moment you get into the league table argument, you're wanting to get into comparisons about things which may not compare for a variety of different reasons. What PISA does is shows how you're performing essentially within a wider structure. It's not the be-all and end-all. It's not surprising. For example, I remember being at a presentation in Hong Kong from a Chinese professor who said, why are you surprised that Shanghai, for example, does so well? This is a society that has been focused on competitive examination for 1,000 years.
Yes.
You know, and you understand that. Similarly, you know, Finland doesn't know why they did so well. There are lots of possible reasons. One is homogenous culture, a culture that's focused on a language that's not spoken by anybody else. You know, there's a variety of reasons. So PISA's a useful indication. It tells you some interesting things. But if you were to set your educational policy only by how you perform in PISA, you'd be letting down the people you're trying to serve.
Yeah, and there is a semi-humorous observation there, Mike, that even if you were to become successful in it, you'll then lose it because you'll spend the next year hosting all the other countries instead of teaching.
The interesting thing this year is Poland. Poland's a really interesting country in terms of education. It's done lots of really important things, some of which are actually very like what we've done in Scotland. Rather an interesting issue. But, you know, there are some dissimilarities. I think what Scotland's doing in PISA is looking at it seriously, saying it's important to us, but saying there's some other things too. And one of them is actually now reflected in the wider PISA statistics, closing the achievement gap. Really important issue. Making sure that young people, no matter where they come from, can succeed. And, you know, if we're doing that, and PISA's showing we're doing that, I'm quite happy.
Mm. Well, it's certainly, you know, something that we would very much agree with, is that, you know, there are important lessons in PISA, but it shouldn't become a, you know, a purpose in itself. So it's good to hear that. Mate, okay, well, try and bring you back to that.
Sorry. PISA. One of the issues about PISA too is the impending issue of PISA tests that schools can run themselves. I think we need to be very skeptical about that. You know, south of the border, for example, PISA testing is going to be licensed. I am an agnostic on that at the present moment. I can see some arguments for and some arguments against, but what I've actually said is we're not going to license them while we have that discussion and that debate. Because I think if we were to create a generation that simply learnt how to do PISA tests, that wouldn't answer educational questions.
Yeah. Right, so I was just going to try and press on with that you know, a bit of future thinking. In terms of technology and the fact that, you know, young people can now access things like the, you know, the massive online courses and, you know, are used to going on YouTube and, you know, resources like that, even paid ones like lynda.com to get learning. What challenges does that set for us in terms of, you know, having a profession that may not quite understand what's ahead? Do you have thoughts on that?
Well, I think the profession does understand what's ahead. I mean, I think the experience of Curriculum for Excellence has, you know, said to the Scottish teacher profession that there is a need to understand change that's taking place and to be part of that change. A Curriculum for Excellence is a process, not an event. It's a way of doing things, not a curriculum. And I think that's helped to free up the professionalism of teachers. And once we've freed up the professionalism of teachers, then they're ready and capable to adapt to most circumstances. And I think that's happening in Scotland. I'm very happy about it. In terms of technology, you know, ideally, in the ideal world, if I, you know, I had a magic wand to wave, I would to a one-to-one relationship with, you know, learning devices. I think that's a useful thing to do. I think that's where the world is going. Financially, that's very hard to do. So we need to welcome own device use. We need to welcome those who are willing to experiment and to push the envelope on this matter. But I do think, you know, we are going to have to move there. That's where things are going. That's where things are good. And we should just encourage that to happen. And if it's difficult for people to adapt to, well, we need to train people and to help them to adapt to it.
Okay, that's an interesting view. One of the other things about that technology is we know it's disruptive. You know, that idea that it always it always manages to go faster than our own legislation, I suppose, you know, for what we're doing. Do you think there's ever a chance that we might see a time that young people start to see better alternatives online? I know this is quite a bleak question in some ways, you know, but they start to see so many better alternatives that they just want to go directly there rather than through schooling.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting thought. Somebody who, 30 or 40 years ago read Ivan Illich and read Deschooling Society and thought there's an argument to be had in there. I'm absolutely not saying that's where I am. But I think we have to be open to those possibilities, and therefore schools have to recognize those possibilities. Are we going to move away from compulsory schooling? No, we're not. It's extremely important to us. Should we be more open to the types of schooling that exist in Scotland? Yes, we probably should be. Although we've been very innovative in methodology, you know, with Curriculum for Excellence, we've been not terribly innovative in structures of delivery. In Argyll, for example, which you and I, Matthew, know well, I think 15 years ago, there was a director of education that produced an infamous thing called the Vision Paper.
Well, the Vision Paper, I've heard of that,
yeah. Indeed. I think you should really have sound effects here, a drum roll.
We'll edit those in later.
Indeed. And what the Vision Paper was saying, you know, we've got these buildings, we've got pupils going to them in a very limited period of time. How do we make education more flexible? And, you know, I was one of the people who opposed that. I mean, you know, without, you know, I say it's actually slightly ashamed now because it seemed to be so radical. But actually, what I sometimes call in internal meetings the ready brick school of education that says, you know, young people get up in the morning, they have a bowl of cereal, they go out to a school, they come home again at 4 o'clock. You know, we need to break away from that. And I think what probably we're waiting for in Scotland is some of the discussion about how we break away from that. It'll be limited. It'll be different. It will do different things. But we're probably moving in that direction.
In terms of the policy story then, Mike, how do you integrate that kind of vision with your colleagues around the cabinet table? You know, I'm thinking, for example, in the English setting, we had the story of the extended schools, which promised a lot, fallen by the wayside. So a much more integrated view of the social economic circumstances and education.
To discussion about this. I mean, you know, we should accept where we are. We're delivering a good education system, which is on the way, I believe, in terms of taxonomy of education systems to being a great education system. Mm. We should work hard on that. We should make sure it delivers for every pupil. But we should also be open to variation and different ideas and patterns of delivery. You know, Scotland's a very distributed system. They used to say of the French education minister that he could look at the clock on the wall and know what every child was learning at the moment. Scottish education ministers can only dream of such power. You know, we have a system.
That one's only true of directors of education in Glasgow, I believe, Mike.
Well, indeed, but we have a very different system. We have a system in which there is local variation, not just at local authority level and all 32 local authorities, but at school level. And we should encourage that. We should encourage experimentation and thought, and I do, and see what develops. I'm very much an organic person in that regard. These changes are not going to come because I dictate them from the centre. They're going to come because they're appropriate in local circumstances, and that is the way we should take them forward.
Okay.
Fair enough. But I suppose then my question would be...
Steve, we lost you there.
We lost you, yeah.
If you can hear us, Steve, try that again.
My question would be...
Nope. Sorry, Mike. Steve, that one's gone. Will you fix your tech? I'll squeeze mine in then. Sorry, Mike. One of the constant themes on our cast, because of this English-Scottish connection that we try to make, is that that there may be an observation that England has a lot of variety in its education system. You know, the thousand flowers blooming. You know, from the very excellent to the downright poor practice. Whereas Scotland, probably, although you know you're talking very much about introducing diversity, has probably been slightly more uniform across the board.
I'll address that point in a moment, but it's very important. Language is very important here. I'm not introducing diversity. That would imply that in some sense there is a system directed from the top that can do that. I don't think that's true in Scotland. What I do is encourage diversity. I create the context in which diversity is acceptable and people can innovate. And that's what an education minister in Scotland should do, all the time. In terms of the wider issue, yes, I do think there is an argument for change and development driven from the ground, and that's what should happen. What's happening south of the border is, 100 good ideas before breakfast. I'm sure Michael Gove is more capable of 100 ideas before breakfast, but that actually doesn't produce lasting change. What we need to do is to develop those people who want to do things differently, to give them the courage to do so, to show there are no penalties in doing so. And some of those issues in Scotland are complex issues. For example, some people are afraid to innovate because they think that they'll be marked down by the inspectorate for innovating. If you do things differently, it won't be acceptable. We need to create the context in which change can take place, and that's my job.
Excellent. Steve, do you want to try that again?
No, I can you hear me now?
Yeah, you're clear now. Yep.
No, I think Mike's just answered my question. I suppose part of it was around scalability, that you've seen, you've encouraged the diversity and you think actually there's something that really does need to be scaled up here. But I think you partly answered that question, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also not a fan of saying, let's do one thing and let's roll it out across the country. When I hear the word rolling out, I always get nervous. People need to have it. If they have a good idea, they should see if it works. If it works, other people will want to emulate it and develop it. We sometimes have a view, particularly in the public sector, that once you've done something new somewhere, the system isn't valid until everybody has done it. That's not true. No, there will be a diversity. And we should accept that diversity of practice. There are two things that drive it. One is continuing performance. We need to make sure that young people get the opportunity to succeed, and we can't undermine that. So there is a need for an understood examination system, essentially an equivalence of qualification, all those things. And the second thing is we need to make sure teachers develop their professional practice in a way that they are confident that what they're doing is always in the best interest of those they teach. As long as those two things are in place, then we've got good ground rules for some continuous development, which may vary from place to place.
And another quick question, just to develop this theme, Mike, is that as we move schooling into the kind of medium term, the further future, the global economy may well become a bigger player. You know, it may be in ways that we can't yet foresee. I'm sure that at government level, you guys, have advisors and think a lot about this. But how well do you think that we're able to support teachers on the ground in understanding that ever changing landscape?
That's a really interesting issue, and it relates to teachers' knowledge of the wider world and the world of work. One of the criticisms I hear quite often is that teachers don't understand the world of work, and I think we need to address that. There's a number of people engaged in that issue, and to say teachers come from the real world, they're part of the real world, so are young people. They need to see what the opportunities are for their young people, not to lack aspiration, but also to have a sense of reality. I think we do need in teacher education to create curious teachers, teachers who see all those links. And I think our teacher education system has improved and continues to improve. I think we've always had a good system. I think we're now, with the Donaldson reforms, getting a system that's really at the cutting edge. We have a uniquely successful entry into the profession through the probation system, and that's respected worldwide. It's a very good system. I mean, one of the big worries I had when I became education secretary is it wasn't working well enough because we were taking people into probation and there were no jobs for them, and we've managed to solve that, and that's good. But we also need to have a system that constantly refreshes teachers' knowledge of the world and what they're doing. And therefore, I think the College of Leadership, the new College of Leadership we're setting up, which is not just about head teachers or departmental heads, but it's for all teachers, because all teachers are educational leaders. That's one important part of it. And the second one is the career refresh issue and the master's level profession issue. That is an issue of making sure that teachers are constantly learning, to be fair, every other profession is. Yeah. I think professions are defined by their ability to continue to learn and to change. And, teachers need to do that. And I have to say, most teachers take to that, like, if I may use the phrase, ducks to water.
I once had an experience, may or may not be of interest to you, when I, with a group of probationary teachers I was working with, made an input of a few hours trying to elicit their views about how Britain made its money and some of the economic things that were presented, for example, in the BBC programme on how Britain works or whatever it was called. I can't remember the name. And it was interesting. The feedback after it was probably just slightly less than half of them saying that was really, really thought-provoking and it got them thinking about how they would support young people for their careers, and the other half saying it had nothing to do with them whatsoever. That was an interesting thing.
Yes, and I think that, teachers, like any other group of people, some will have got up and got out of the bed on the wrong side in the morning, and some will not be entirely sure that they want to be there, and some are wondering whether they're going to win the lottery that night. That's where things are. But by and large, we want teachers of enthusiasm and curiosity, and I think we have a system through CFE that will help that to happen. People are happiest in jobs when they're empowered. All the research shows if you have individuals in jobs who are empowered, that is a satisfying job. One of the things CFE has been about is about empowering teachers. And I think that's so positive because that creates a profession, frankly, that wants to come in the morning. And that's great.
Absolutely. Just one final question. I know Steve's coming in with another one quickly. I know that you've been very, very upfront about promoting the idea of a master's level profession. I wonder if you could say a wee bit more about why you think that's so important, as opposed to just getting a curious profession, by other means.
Well, I think formal qualification is important. I mean, we say that to children. We should believe it as adults. It is important to have formal qualification, the structure of qualifications. But I think it also means that teachers will essentially have a basket of learning opportunities which they can fill. And that enhances their professionalism. It enhances their ability to teach. If you look at places where a master's level profession exists, then it demands continuing curiosity and continuing learning. And that's what we should do in any profession. What would concern me if we didn't do that is we go back, and I'm not trying to criticize here. Yeah. We go back to the idea that underlaid the chartered teacher idea, which was some teachers were particularly good at teaching. And some teachers did other things, right? Yeah. I think that is a dangerous idea. I understand what was behind the chartered teachers issue. I think we've had some wonderful teachers through it. But it was, in the end, a divisive idea because it said there are some teachers who are really good at teaching and there are some teachers who are going to be good at management.
At heart, you're an egalitarian then about how we take the profession forward. Yes. Oh, have we lost Mike? Mike, we lost you briefly there. Sorry, just in the middle of saying about the divisive thing.
I'm an ambitious egalitarian. I think we should have...
Have we still got you, Mike?
Yeah, you still got me. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we had a couple of glitches there. You dropped out. So basically you were saying there then that you weren't for that divisive approach, but you're ambitious for all.
I'm for aspiration. I'm for making sure that everybody wants to do the best they can do.
Okay. Thanks for that. Steve?
Yeah, just a quick question. I'm just interested in your personal policymaking story. So as a politician, besides getting re-elected and seeing the exam results go in the way that you want, I mean, how would you judge your success at the end of the day? I mean, what would give you the most satisfaction?
You mean apart from winning the referendum on the
18th? Yes, apart from the...
I wondered if you'd slip that in.
and allow me to say, I do think that's important in educational terms. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you why. Because you cannot close the achievement gap. You cannot make a real difference in that unless you control tax, welfare, and labour market regulation. The big issues in resolving those questions of inequality lie in those areas. So you have to have those powers in the Scottish Parliament. So I believe independence is a prerequisite for further progress, further substantial progress in education. It's also a prerequisite for further substantial progress in childcare and in early years education. And I think there are big issues in further and higher education as well. So apart from that, I think, you know, the thing that gives me the most satisfaction is making sure that time and again we're focused on what matters to young people, and time and again we're saying to teachers, we value you, we value your contribution. What we're doing in Scotland together is making a better series of opportunities for young people. That's a big thing, and that's what we do in everything we do.
Absolutely. Well, I think you've given generously of your time, Mike. I'm sure you can imagine got a few hundred other questions we'd love to ask you, but it's not fair to press on.
For asking. It's been very enjoyable. And you know, for those who are listening, discussing it in this way is what we need to do in Scotland. We need a positive dialogue about education and everything else. And thanks for giving me the chance to be part of it.
Well, that's much appreciated. Thank you very much. We'll be more careful in future in our jokes about whether you and Mike will go over listening. We'll be much more thoughtful.
Big skins, okay?
Thanks for that, Mike. Good night. Bye. And we'll see you again.
Thank you, Mike. We really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you.